Hello and welcome to MLW Confusion. I'm your host, Rob Cameron, bringing you all that you may or may not need to know about Major League Wrestling. Or at least that's how this normally goes. Today we have a very special edition of the podcast of the con. We are going to speak with Delmi Exo, current MLW featherweight champion and current WXW women's champion, or at least at the time of this here recording. Well, I mean, we could find out here, you know, in the next couple weeks or so, or, you know, if you're listening to this podcast like 30 years down the road, and she had to be, you know, unseated because, you know, age and whatnot. Anyway, rattling on incoherently about that. Before we get into that, though, want to do a cheap plug for SCW Pro. Once again, MLW Confusion is sponsoring one of their fine events. This time it is the 20th anniversary. 20 long years SCW Pro has been in existence. They're celebrating September 9th, 7 p.m. at the Bluegrass Community Center. Main event, triple threat match between the Devil Dog, Dustin Moseley, Joe Asa, and the champ, JT Energy. And so, yeah, I was doing professional stuff there for a moment and then just lost my train of thought. But yeah, check those out. I'll be there, of course. So if you're in the eastern Iowa, western Illinois area, or you're just willing to travel that far, come check it out. It's one of the best kept secrets in the Midwest. And we'll get you some energy drinks here in a moment. But stay tuned. We got Delmi Exo. If you're like me, sometimes you need a pick-me-up to get you through the day. I drink Raise Energy for that pickup. Raise comes in a bunch of different flavors, and more recently, Italian Ice, which is great, by the way. And it contains no sugar, so there's no crash after you drink it. And really, like, best of all, if you go through me and go to wetrepsports.com, use my code CASS, you get 15% off your order. So, also, be like CASS, drink Raise Energy. Welcome to MLW Confusion. Today is a special, special occasion because one, I have a guest, but two, this guest is the current reigning, defending MLW featherweight champion and WXW women's champion, Delmi Exo. Delmi, how are you doing this evening?
Hello, I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. It's great to finally have an MLW champion on the show, let alone one like in their current reign. The pleasure is all mine. We're just going to kind of jump right into things. You told me off air that you were in Germany right now defending the WXW championship, and you've been doing some training over there. How's the training over in Germany compared to that of the United States?
I feel like the trainers here are really great. First off, I do have to like tip my hat off to them. Peter, who works with MLW and is recently contracted to them as a trainer, is really good with all the kids. And Rotation, who I'm sure a lot of people know as a staple guy in the German area and the European area. They're just both so welcoming and really encouraging in the way they train people and the way they go about coaching. I wish I had that kind of upstart when I started my journey. But it's nice to see like all the new kids coming in and like knowing that they're going to have such a better experience coming into the business and breaking in than what it was 9 years ago when I started. You know, it's a breath of fresh air being here. And the training is just so intelligent. My brain is constantly trying to wrap around and remember everything I'm being taught because there's so many like details. It's all detail work, and I'm a huge nerd for that, and I love it.
That is awesome. One of the things I kind of, dare I say, use the phrase mark out about is just the kind of, we'll call it the cultural differences within wrestling based on the continents, because each continent really kind of favors its own style. And Germany has a rich history with the Catch and Otto Wands is promotion, the Catch Wrestling Association. And so like I find that fascinating. And they did bring out some people who got famous in America as well, you know, Claudio Castagnoli and whatnot. So you mentioned kind of how you wish you had that the training that you're getting over there over here, and how things are, you know, progressively moving forward, which we know is we're making small progress into just kind of, I don't want to say regulating the system, but bringing these lessons back to America. Do you have any, you know, do you have any desire to slip into that trainer role yourself?
Personally, I do not. I do enjoy helping people out when they ask me specific questions, or if someone asks me specifically for feedback. I don't mind doing it in that regards. However, I am not one to be in that role where you are constantly the coach or the teacher and the person that has to get looked at for questions or guidance. I just don't think it's my strength to do that. However, I do believe in like setting up a school within my area and helping to run that in regards of like actually setting it up physically and being there as a presence. I wouldn't want to be a head coach or a head trainer, though. That is not where my path is going to take me.
And that's fair. That can be some, that's a conversation really, I mean, 10, maybe even 20 years down the road per se. Just thought we'd wing that as well. And you've done some time training in Japan. How do you compare the Japanese training to the training you're getting in Germany?
The Japanese training was way more brutal, if I'm being honest. I am currently covered in bruises right now, but I'm pretty sure that's only because I left my iron pills at home. I'm anemic, and I have been off of them for 10 days, and it is showing. However, when I was in Japan, I feel like I had come in way heavier because I didn't want to get injured. So I was 10 pounds heavier, believe it or not, when I was in Japan than I am right now. And I think that helped. But the training in Japan was definitely a lot more taxing on my body. We went running almost every morning. And then we would come in to do like calisthenics or like ring work, take a break, and then come back to the ring after to do all our like bumping and rolling and all the wrestling stuff that we were going to learn that day. And then on top of that, me and Masha, who I stayed with, would take another break to eat something and then go right into weight training. So the Japanese training was like way more physically taxing. This trip has been, believe it or not, my vacation, actually. This is my PTO that I've put in for work. And so, you know, I've been able to walk the hour to the school and work out and then go into class for two or three classes that they run. But it is not as brutal on my body. And there's even times where they're like, oh, like, you know, you can like sit out, guys. We don't, because I'm stupid. And I'm like, no, I'm gonna bump. But like, they give you the option, like, if you're tired, it's like, no, if you're tired or if you're sore on something, like, sit out and watch at least. Which in Japan, that was not the option.
No, the Japanese are usually, traditionally pretty hardcore, but I didn't know if that was something that had changed relatively, if that was something else that was changing in recent times or not. So threw that out there. In addition to this training, you are wrestling for WXW, defending that championship, the women's championship, which you won at Never Say Never from Ava Everett. What was that like? How did you feel being able to be a dual champion, and not just, you know, in a major promotion in the United States, but one of like the major promotions in Europe?
I think at the moment it was obviously like, I just wanted to live in that moment forever, and it was incredible. And I couldn't picture it happening to me. I had been given a lot of closed doors coming into my own as a wrestler in my like singles career when I was trying to take off as this God Queen character. And so like hearing that bell ring and then hearing like the crowd cheering, I just wanted to like hide in a little ball for a second and like kind of hunk my younger self and tell her to keep going, because That's what it's really all about. I mean, you chase this dream for so long and sometimes it doesn't love you back. So in those moments where you finally get like this moment where it's like, hey, this is your cup that you've been working for. Like, this is it. This is that moment that you like sacrifice all these things for. It just feels so surreal and you're just like, please don't let this go away.
Watching at home, like, I'm not gonna lie, like, I cheered aloud for it because I've been watching you as much as I can since, well, I'll throw it out there, like, this has been this is a big Chikara home, and you've done, you did your time in Chikara, and we won't dwell on that because it's got its baggage or whatever, and then we didn't talk about that beforehand, but just like that puts you on my radar, and just like anytime I can see the folks that I've kind of like watched grow because I was relatively early in your career is just amazing for me. And just for you to be able to come in through MLW, win the MLW championship, and then turn around and have a banger of a match with Abra Everett and become a dual champion was, amazing for me to watch. And that's just, me staring at a TV screen, not living in the moment and working at it for my entire life. So like that, that had to have been amazing, and applaud you for it.
Thank you.
That being said, though, now you have to, now you have to defend both titles. And obviously you're doing that coming up, but sticking to the WXW side, who are you looking forward to defending the title against the most?
I did get to face in the ring against Calypso, so that was really cool. There's a couple of the women who I know unfortunately aren't going to be on tour with the dates that I'm lined up with, which is kind of a bummer, because there's some of like the great ones who have set the stage for the women's division in WXW. I mean, like French Hope Damal has like she's the longest reigning, so like having a chance to wrestle her would have been cool. I met Alice Inc, and she was in like Shortcut to the Top, but I was facing Calypso that night. But it's like obviously I can't wrestle twice, but it's like if only I could have gotten in the ring with her as well. And then like Iva is also like really incredible, and she's so like strong and jacked, and we could have done so many things with like a powerhouse dynamic there. So yeah, unfortunately I know I won't be able to wrestle those women. Someone who is on my radar is going to be Ava Everett, because she's been talking a lot of smack and she wants her rematch, rightfully so. But I'll give her rematch. I'll put her away for good this time.
There you go. Are you planning on defending the championship stateside?
If I can bring it back, then yes, I did manage to have two title defenses at Wrestling Open. In Worcester, Massachusetts, I was able to face against Tiara James and against Rebecca Scott, before I came over to Germany.
Foreshadowing, is Tiara James has just joined MLW. Is there any thoughts on putting her on your radar to defend the title with in an MLW ring? Well, either a WXW title or, for that matter, the featherweight championship.
At the moment, no. I would like to see her kind of come up and come into her own a little bit more. I do predict facing off against either Maki Ito next or against Becca, depending on who wins in that matchup. Kind of hoping for Maki Ito, because that would be awesome as a first timer. But Becca's my friend, so if I have to wrestle her again, then it's totally fine. But I'm rooting for Maki
Oh,
Ito.
so that's like I've gone on the record for that one. I'm like, I don't know who to root for. Like, as a fan of Maki Ito, I stan both women. Like they're both amazing. And so like I'm looking forward to that match in Fury Road. And then of course byproduct, that's a number one contenders match. So I'm looking forward to whomever the winner may be for that match for you to defend the title against them. Since we're wandering back into MLW territory and we've kind of talked the contenders, touching base on Becca, like she, like, despite her being in the number one contenders match, she is already trying to put her stamp on the title. At the time of this recording, last week, she done El Kabonged you. Is there any plans at this moment to get your revenge?
I didn't even think about getting revenge. That's a good idea.
you're gonna be honorable and was only thinking about waiting for that match to come, and then Ruto at heart over here on this side of the screen.
What a baby face. one down, get revenge. You'll switch Ray for Nair. I think Becca deserves a title shot. She's one of the people who came up at a time where there was so much shut down, and she came up so fast because she worked so hard to get to the level that she's at right now. And so would I give her a title shot regardless if she becomes a number one contender? To me, she's already a number one contender. Any promotions she steps into, she deserves a title shot. So yeah, one-on-one, I would face her in the ring anytime, any day.
Good. Well, I mean, she'll have her, it sounds like she'll have her opportunity, and an opportunity that she's obviously lobbying for very hard right now. And personally, I'm excited to see a lot of, at least fresh for MLW eyes, because MLW has really worked to revamp the featherweights, bring in Becca, Tiara James, Mandy Leon. So you're going to have no shortage of challengers here for the foreseeable future. But going back farther, winning the MLW featherweight title, you are the second title holder for that championship, and you beat one of kind of the well-respected veterans of women's wrestling in Taya Valkyrie. Tell us how that felt.
Taya was someone who I had watched early on when I was still training. I think I was maybe 1 year into wrestling at this point. She had come in with Lucha Underground. I know she had worked on the indies a little bit before then, but Lucha Underground really like put a huge magnifying glass on her for people like me who were really only watching TV product at the time. And seeing her at a time where like women's wrestling was just now getting into that revolution phase that we hit was incredible, because like one, her physique is ridiculous. I'm having to stand across the ring from her. Oh my God. I hit shoulders like 3 times that week after, because man, did I feel small. And she's just such a star. She has such a presence about her. And it's something that like I find so admirable, and I could only hope to achieve one day. But she's just so larger than life. And so being able to share a moment like that with her in the ring just felt like it elevated me, and it felt like it did what it had to do for that match. Being able to like one pin her and then the following match submit her was insane. And I mean, I cannot thank her enough for giving me the opportunity to wrestle her. Not a lot of people are willing to step in the ring, and I'm saying this as if I'm like very green, but I mean, just for her name value alone, like to be in the division and like actually wrestle long enough to be able to like put the belt up and lose it and pass it down to the next generation is something that's so admirable, and not a lot of people do that. And I think we do need to give her flowers for doing that, because she was moving on to bigger things, but she still, you know, gave the opportunity for the next generation to come up. And that's incredible to me.
I know, like I can say behind the veil, the my cohorts in the Urban Wrestling Network aren't a big fan of Taya's, but you can't deny everything that she's accomplished in the business, especially like looking at Mexico, because it's, you know, women's wrestling is a whole nother beast down there, and for someone that isn't from Mexico to kind of make the impact that she has, like that's kind of a big effing deal, which of course also lent her to going to Lucha Underground because of the partnership with AAA on that. But it's, you know, I do think that was a big boost to the featherweight division to get someone of her name value in. And also another, you know, I think it's a big feather in your cap to be able to beat her, you know, twice in a row on top of, you know, just being able to say you beat the champ, but to beat her decisively twice is a big deal. And to further, you know, heap praise upon you, It's well deserved, as you know, you're part of the core. You were part of the core group of featherweights when MLW started its featherweight division. Yourself, your sister Brittany Blake, Willow Nightingale, Holodead, like all kind of like set the standard for MLW. But in between, you know, the start of it, there was kind of a gap. So what brought you back to MLW?
Yeah, there was a gap. I'm honestly drawing a blank on why there was a gap. honestly, what just brought me back was they reached out and they asked me if I was available for a date. And I said yes. And then shortly after that, they offered me the contract.
Awesome. Okay. It was one of those like little things, because there's about a year long gap in between when everything started and then come back.
Yeah,
and,
there wasn't anything bad that happened. Like, there was no, like, nothing bad happened heat-wise or, like, anything backstage. It just didn't get sent any dates. It's not like I was contracted then, so they needed to bring me in. And we didn't have anything storyline-wise, really. So, yeah, I wasn't too bent up out of shape. In my opinion, it was like, oh, that was a cool experience. And I was just happy for the opportunity when it first happened.
No, that's understandable. I mean, MLW does have, you know, 20 years of history in its own right. And, you know, and at a certain level is a larger platform than a lot of indie wrestlers get to work at any given time. But seeing that you were there from, we'll say, the beginning of the featherweight division and now being atop of that division, describe being able to work your way up to the top and, you know, the I don't want to say necessarily the struggles, but just how it feels to be like, they're pretty much day one-ish and be able to come back and now be the top.
I think, I say I think a lot before I start a sentence. I feel like it's great to see how far the company's grown with women. When we first started, me and Ashley as the tag team there, there wasn't much we were able to do because there wasn't a whole lot of like tag team women's wrestling going on, especially with established tag teams in women's wrestling. And so you could only go so far with that. I think now that I'm a singles competitor, it's just easier to tell that story. It's such an easy story for people to understand. And me being the person who's at the front lines of the division, I feel comfortable in the fact that I know myself that I'm not going to set a harsh standard and the women coming in are going to be treated correctly. Like, there's not going to be any of that awful like gatekeeping that used to happen back in the day. And like, if I'm in charge of the locker room, I understand how to be a locker room leader and how to, you know, set a good environment for the women to come in, and like new women coming in on their first day, women exiting out of the company, like just having a good foundation for us to be able to work in that's professional and comfortable.
As such, you know, we're looking, it looks like they're continuously just right now anyway, looking to expand the featherweights. Who out there that's not signed would you like to see come in and be able to show what they can do for the larger audience, or if nothing else, the MLW audience?
Jordan Blade. I say Jordan Blade every time.
Daddy of the district. That was to toot my own horn. That was like my pick for first official female member of the Beaumaye Fight Club. That I think she would fit that like a glove. And am a fan of her work in general. So, you know, I'm going to mark that. And next time I get on with the Urban Wrestling guys, you know, toot my horn on that one. At least one person on the inside agrees with me.
I can.
You know, barring that, it does look like you're going to have your hands full, you know, potentially have your hands full, you know, for a bit. Cause again, there, we got this influx of talent, number one contenders match coming up at, Fury Road. You mentioned coming, working with your sister, Sea Stars. Is there any possibility we'll see them, that you guys reform an MLW?
As of now, no. I'm just working as a singles wrestler. Ashley is out with an injury.
But sticking with the Sea Stars theme, what was it like coming into MLW with your sister?
I think it was great because of the fact that at the time Prezak was helping to book the women, so it felt like a comfortable area coming into. We had worked with him for Shimmer, so it was just like an easy transition from the Berwyn Eagles Club to these bright lights, you know? It kind of took a little bit of the pressure off of what that was.
I've been a fan of Prezak's work, and he's done so much for women's wrestling in America. And to see him hop aboard MLW was, I felt like a good sign of things to come for the division. And then also, as a fan of women's wrestling, got my hopes up, especially when I got to see Sea Stars versus Top Dogs, which were two of my favorite indie teams. But alas, that expansion, kind of slowed down. And obviously didn't have enough of a roster to kind of make a featherweight tag team division. That being said, so we kind of talked MLW. We did talk training, and speaking of kind of like training and promotion, you have your own promotion, Prom Wrestling Grind. How did that come about?
Me and my partner, Rip Bison, had kind of always talked about how if we ran a show, we would do things differently. We traveled the road together a lot. So on our long drives, we would just, kind of spitball ideas that we had. And a lot of our ideas tend to be similar in the way we believe wrestling should be and be portrayed and be taken care of. So we just kind of, saved up some money to be able to set a few things for the promotion, and we kind of pulled the trigger on it because the world was coming back into wrestling with a live crowd, and we were like, you know what? If there's ever a time to do this, it's gonna be now. And we've been running with Pro Wrestling Grind ever since.
And anytime we can continue to expand the business, it's great. And the more places people have to work, the better overall for the industry. So for those of for who those of you who aren't familiar with Pro Wrestling Grind, what is its, we'll call it, style? Does it have a kind of set wrestling style or type of wrestler that it promotes, books regularly?
Jokingly, our style is very WCW cruiserweight and hosses. So those are the two wrestlers we book. Grind is for the hosses and the WCW cruiserweights. And if you fit any of those two molds, you're in. where you have a very large, like, Puro influence in terms of like old school All Japan meets early Noah in the way we have things set up. We took a lot of influence from the early Ring of Honor styles. So even our ring canvas has like that green border around the ring, like the old ROH canvas had. And just like different things. We give matches more times. We have less matches on the card. People get paid their rate. People get paid before the show starts. So that way, if they have to go to work the next day, they can, head out. It's a team effort. It's a group effort. I do not take credit for how completely smooth the show day runs. We just knew all our friends in the business who do their job correctly and do their job well and hired them. So we have the best camera people in the Northeast. We have the best, videographers, the best commentators, the best sound people. And they're all our friends that we grew up with in the business. So it was just easy to know to employ the right people to do the job you want and then not dictate or micromanage them because they're going to do it correctly.
Where can we find Pro Wrestling Grind?
Pro Wrestling Grind is currently on IWTV. That is the Independent Wrestling Network. It's IWTV.live, and you can watch our whole catalog on there. And then we do have some matches on YouTube. I am going to be focusing more on building up our YouTube channel and uploading some matches. So if there's any you want to see, definitely tweet at us. That's at GrindPuro, or shoot us a message on Instagram at GrindPuro as well.
How often do you guys run? Do you do monthly, weekly?
It's about like every other month. We average 8 shows a year. So this is actually, we're coming to the end of our sophomore year in October. So it'll be our second year anniversary in October. So we'll be running for, we'll be going on to our third year after that. And yeah, averaging 8 shows a year.
All right. Well, for a fledgling promotion, that's really great numbers anyway, because so many promotions do one or two shows and then just kind of fade off into the ether. So that is awesome. So, you know, anybody who doesn't have IWTV, it's like $10 a month. Huge catalog, specifically of current indie wrestling, and just a back catalog of a lot of promotions as well. So cheap plug for them at this moment. I'm a subscriber. Not that that should sway anything, but there's so much wrestling to be had on it. And just like, well, there's just so much wrestling to be had right now in general. Despite all this wrestling being had, you don't hear too many stories about female promotion owners and women bookers. How has your experience been being a promoter and booker?
I do appreciate all the performers that we bring in. I think it's possibly because of the fact that we have such a good like roster of like genuine people coming in, that they do have a strong sense of like, oh, Delmi and Rip own this. It's not just Rip because he's the guy. But I have noticed that there are moments from outsiders where they just assume that Rip is the owner because he is the male. But the reality is that like we both split the workload. He always jokes that I actually do more before show day, because like show day, it's like mostly him with like dictating setup. But like throughout the entire month leading up to the show, it's mostly me with like graphics and like promoting and flyering and like all of that stuff that comes with literally promoting. And so yeah, he always is like, Delmi's actually the big boss, like listen to her, which is great. But I do notice that outside of that, people assume that it's his promotion, which is quite funny.
Well, at least you're splitting up the work evenly, or you put it, you're doing most of the work. So I can make a joke like that's the entirety of my marriage, is I just run around looking like I do the important stuff. And no, I don't do anything at all.
The medical work. He does like, the work. Like when we had to cut the boards for the ring. Yeah, that's all him. I could not tell you how to do that. I would go to Home Depot and give him the dimensions and then pay more.
Well, you might as well, because if you have to, you know, get doors or, you know, ring tables, you know, just get everything in bulk. But I shouldn't say things like that. I have no clue what goes on into that. It's easy for me behind my keyboard here to make all sorts of smug little comments. You know, getting back into the promoting, booking aspect of it, is this something that you'd be interested in doing, like, long term? I mean, obviously, you know, you got the safe space now, but is this... How do I want to phrase it? Is this how you kind of like foresee going through the rest of your wrestling time as well, and post in-ring career?
Yeah, actually, having been here in Germany now, I feel like there's a lot that I like stole idea-wise from them, and they know because they see me asking questions and they've gotten suspicious. there's a lot that I've like picked up on and like learned that I definitely plan on bringing over to Grind and adding to what makes us so unique and great. And yeah, I think if I were to have to leave my wrestling boots in the ring today, I would still be running Grind shows. Like that's not going away. The amount that I've been able to give back into wrestling for as much as I've been able to get is just so fulfilling. Like seeing people grow in the company and like get bigger and more opportunities, because it helps them network with guys from different territories. It helps them have better matches that they can send out, or just have better like catalog for their own wrestling resumes. It's so rewarding in that aspect.
And how do you juggle, we'll call it the multiple hats, promoter, booker, and in-ring talent? Because I talked with Jake Crist like 3 months ago, and he talked about how on one hand booking was great, but great booking came at the expense of his in-ring career. How are you kind of balancing everything out?
I don't think I have too much on my plate in terms of my own bookings. I kind of pick and choose where I wrestle now. It's great because, like, being signed to MLW, I have a set standard of dates for them. So, like, they're first come, first serve. And with Grind, they're first come, first, whatever that was that I just said. So that's always easy. And then after that, I kind of just fill in a little bit with the gaps. I don't try to flood my schedule, but that's also because, like, this is another hat I have. I'm a manager at my job, so I don't like taking too much time off from my shoot job to go and do wrestling because I actually kind of enjoy my job. And I like do make more money working at my shoot job than I would if I were to go out and wrestle somewhere.
That's fair. I can make the joke that, that's like all of us. That's why I have a real job while I podcast, because no. That's kind of a great explanation, because I know some people really do like to either spread themselves too thin or they just hyper-focus at whatever's in front of them, and being able to maintain a balance, I mean, is great for your sanity. Speaking of kind of the creative aspect of, you know, booking or whatnot, the God Queen. For those of us who are, you know, living under a rock, for some odd reason, listening to MLW Confusion, but don't watch MLW, don't know why you would do that. Could you describe what, who the God Queen is? And then kind of, can we kind of touch on kind of her genesis and how she came to be as a character?
Yeah, so the God Queen was something I created. I was coming more into my own as a woman. Before that, I had kind of gone by like just one of the boys. And to that degree, that was who I was and kind of still am at the time. I didn't have a lot of female friends and I was super awkward. I was the awkward girl who like didn't wear like the right makeup, didn't know how to do my hair correctly, didn't know how to style clothes. And so I was just literally one of the boys because like I liked anime and I liked sports and like, you know, that was just my category. I was more of a tomboy. And then slowly, I guess I like finally hit puberty or something. I finally got into, you know, being a girl. And like, I think part of it was my job. I ended up getting a job, which I still have, where I worked with all women and they kind of helped me grow into my skin more. And the suddenly being called just one of the boys didn't fit who I was anymore. I still had my tomboy aspects, but I felt a little bit more like I grew up and a little more mature than, you know, that tomboy who was making silly videos all the time. And so I created this character who was confident and knew who she was and knew she was the baddest when she walked into a room. And I needed a name for her. So the way I came up with God Queen was actually from Bruiser Brody. He goes by God King. And so I wanted that level of respect for this new version of Delmi. And so I kind of just took his moniker and made it God Queen because it was the female version.
If I can read too much into things, do you think this growth, you say, of kind of like the tomboy character into the God Queen, just one of the boys, the industry has grown so much that I, you know, 10 years ago, it seemed like there no promotion really had anything that resembles a women's division. And I mean, not that a whole lot of promotions necessarily do now, but a lot of times the women had to have intergender matches just because there were so few other women, usually in the local area. Do you think that, again, this is, could be me reading too much into it, but growing from to be just one of the boys to working within, you know, having like women, being able to have a women's division or being able to, you know, bring in, you know, 2, 3, 4 women Do you think there's a correlation between that as, like, you call it growth within yourself, but is this kind of a territorial growth, or at least amongst yourself and the industry?
I feel like you can say it that way too. Back when I started wrestling, like, you kind of, it wasn't really bullying, but like, if you were a girl and you were doing your makeup in the locker room, you got kind of like this idea, like, they would make it seem like, oh, you're stuck up because you're doing your makeup. Or like, oh, she's like full of herself. Like, there was like always a way to put a woman down for something that she was doing. Like, if she showed up dressed up to a show, then it was like, why is she trying so hard? There was always like this little, you couldn't do too much, but then if you didn't do enough, it's like you're not trying. And it was always like that with being a female wrestler. Like, you didn't want to come across as a bitch, but you couldn't come across as like ugly. So it was never like good enough. And so I do think that, like, now that we have more women in the locker room, it feels a little more safer, in terms of like being able to do something as simple as like putting on your lashes. Like, no one's going to be like, why are you putting on your lashes? It's an indie show. It's like, no, I'm putting on my lashes because like I like the way I look in them. It's little things like that that we had to earn. And I do think, you did make a point with that, where it's a lot easier to be able to wear glitter now as a female wrestler than it was 10 years ago.
Well, you can just be a snarky about it and be like, you know who else wore makeup? The Road Warriors.
Yeah, old warrior
Yeah,
warrior.
you gonna tell the warrior that he's, too stuck up? No, just because he's wearing makeup? No. But really, like, I don't know. This is just kind of me and having, like, just watching the entirety of the business. But like, yes, if it's a small show, I can understand not wanting to put some of the legwork in. But like, this business is very visual. And I like, especially now in this age of, I'm gonna wait, hold my, well, oh, there goes my green screen thing on. Like, you can't see me waving my phone around. Oh, and this is an audio podcast, so you're not seeing it anyway. Waving my phone around, everybody has a camera in their hand. Like, I'll out myself. I went to a show today. I mean, I didn't take too many pictures, comparatively speaking, but like, I took 10 plus pictures and a handful of videos. Like, the crowd wasn't huge. But at least there was one lone idiot over there who's now posting photos of their favorite wrestlers on the internet. Like, this is a very visual based field.
Yeah.
And, you kind of, I don't want to say you have to look your best every show, but like, you never know when that next picture is going to come in. You never know when you're going to, go viral for something. And especially in any sort of entertainment business, one good look can make or break your career. You don't want to be that guy who, you went viral because you look like a homeless person and your character is not homeless. You are not homeless, Jimmy. That's why, once again, this is why this is not a visual podcast. But that's soapboxing. But no, really, it's great to kind of hear how, we'll say, less toxic the business is getting, especially compared to like 10 years ago, at least on that front. And of course, we're still hearing stories where, we got work to do, but we're making progress. And obviously, you are a picture of that progress, dual champion, promoter, booker, whole nine yards. That being said, what's next? What's next for DelmiXO?
Man, I feel like it has been 3 years since I left the country. So now, having done that again, I feel like this kind of glass ceiling that I was in is shattered again, and I just want to travel all over again. Like, I got the itch. Ready to see it all. I want to go to the UK. I want to go to Ireland. I want to return to Japan, a whole new person. There's a couple more things that I want to do.
Well, and since it's been a bit since you've been to Japan, like, I feel like the God Queen character would be like one of the that like fit in perfectly with the Joshi scene. But that's just me kind of spitballing out there. but that's great that you've gotten the opportunity to travel again. And I, you know, and if that's what you're wanting to do, I hope it works out for you, because being able to travel the world partially on someone else's dime is the dream, man. Being said, with the traveling stuff, you know, I ask this to a lot of the indie folk I bring on, is there any inkling to, you know, is there any goals to make it to either, say, WWE or AEW, whether it, not necessarily in the near future, but as kind of, we'll call it a big goal?
I actually was reminded about this recently. So, funny enough, when I was training for my first tour in Japan, I had in mind that I was going to come back and be like in the best shape of my life. You know, I was coming off of a bodybuilding prep, going to Japan with 3 months of training. I was going to come back, and my intention was to actually try out for WWE and see if I could like get an NXT contract or some sort of developmental contract. And funny enough, I ended up having to flee Japan because that's when the pandemic really kicked off. And, you know, that being said, I didn't go and get a tryout at all. There was a few people who, like, you know, found ways to get in for a tryout. I wasn't one of those people because I didn't have the right connections. But now, having witnessed the different signings and releases, I don't think that's a path that I would want to risk and shoot my shot with. So I think it's going to be a no for me for trying for WWE. And that's just something that I would be honest with myself. However, AEW, I mean, they have a bunch of wrestlers that I look up to currently. I am looking at my Young Bucks book that I brought with me to Germany to run the plane. And so, like, that would be in the highest that I would aim for is, like, AEW. And that's, like, if I manage to get there. But definitely, like, a goal in mind for, like, the far future.
Well, and goals, everybody's goals are different. And, again, like, stressing that, at least right now, wrestling is in a very healthy state. Like, so even if the goal isn't WWE, AEW, there's still plenty of places to work. There's plenty of money to be made on that front. You know, everyone's goals are going to be different, but as I said, it's just something I kind of like to see and see, hear the rationale why, you know, they're team WWE, team AEW, team I'm just going to do my own thing for the next 5 years, because, you know, that the ride, you know, makes for fascinating stories one way or another. Since you brought it up, I didn't have it written down, but like, just kind of curious, with the world shutting down for the pandemic, how did you as a performer work through it?
It was awful. It was an awful time. I think what got me through it was honestly, like, my boyfriend, Rip. He just kept, like, checking in on me. We weren't living together at the time. He was in Massachusetts. I was in Rhode Island. But we talked every day because we have those things that you were waving around earlier, the cell phones.
Yeah.
And so he was always on top of me. Did you work out today? You know, did you eat correctly? God bless his heart. Because during that time, I was just in such a dark place that I didn't see a light at the end of the tunnel. I was like, yep, this is the end of the world and I'm going down in the ship. And so very on, like, oh, as soon as the world comes back, you know, I'm going to be in best shape of my life. I'm going to, like, have all these matches. He was getting looked at with Limitless for, like, the road tapings, and he was getting pushed pretty heavy. So he was super motivated and, like, he got me through that. I don't think if I didn't have him, I would have probably just, you know, I didn't have boots at the time, so I would have thrown out my kick pads.
Again, like, totally unprecedented times, and everyone kind of got through it differently. Like, I look at guys like Warhorse and like Danhausen, who, you know, both, you know, wonderful workers in their own right, and then used kind of like the pandemic times to just go crazy and create their own TV shows. And so that got them over. And then others have used it to, now we'll call it, like, you use it as a time to get their study on, or kind of like revamp themselves and kind of revamp their career, looking at guys like Devin Storm, Crowbar. But those are crazy times, and I think we all bear the scars of that one way, shape, or form, whether it was the fears of the end time, or, well, now we look out the window and see, you know, other signs of the end time. That's a new one every week now. Have the aliens come back yet? I don't know. all right. Just one last callback, and then I'll turn you loose and you don't have to suffer through me anymore. You did mention being kind of an anime nerd. How much has that been an influence on your wrestling?
Oh, so much. It's the reason why when they tell me, oh, you don't have to bump on the ring, you can use the crash pads, I'm like, I have to bump on the ring. It's like a self-rule because of all the training montages I've seen have influenced my brain to hurt myself. My favorite is Naruto. Naruto is my Bible. I live by that story. It got me through a lot. And I'm so excited that Kana Boom is currently on tour. Me and Rip are kind of looking at tickets to see if we can go, but yeah. And right now I'm currently getting into Demon Slayer. I just finished Spy Family. I think I'm going to wait for Jujutsu Kaisen to catch up to season 2 so I can just binge watch it all, because I'm one of those people who has to binge watch. I can't do that wait for the next episode thing. It drives me nuts. I did it with Naruto, and I did it with other shows that I'm past that. I feel like I'm spoiled now for all the streaming channels where you can just binge watch and stop when you want to stop. But yeah, I just grew up around it. I had Funimation as a channel growing up when I was like in middle school. So I was able to get exposed to a lot of different stuff, and that was pretty cool growing up into it. I would go to the library and find the little small manga section and read some of that stuff. There were some things that I would read that were like awful, to be honest. Like there's this vampire series, not Twilight, but it's like literally a Twilight version in manga, and I read that and I knew it was bad. But I just read it because it was like one of the few mangas that they had. And I was like, oh, God.
Did you go like the uber nerd route and like watch a series and then get the manga version of it and then like pick the two apart and be like, the manga didn't do this, or the movie didn't do this? Like we do with our comic book adaptations or novel adaptations.
I only have done that with Naruto. I did read Death Note, and then I did watch Death Note. But I think I, like, appreciated the differences, because at that point, I understood, like, how hard it is to condense information from text into a movie or into a show. So I try not to, like, nitpick things like that and plot holes like that. I kind of just am, like, appreciate the pieces of art that they are, instead of like, well, why didn't you include this in the character's personality? That's such a big part of it.
I like, my little favorite thing is I have the set of Excel Saga. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. It was kind of a fringe thing back even when it was on. And of course, I'm not a big anime nerd, but oh, it's fringe. We better hand this off to Rob. But the DVD set has almost like pop-up videos of like they would just pop up like little factoids on the screen about like the manga or like the development process of the show during a specific scene, or like how they fought to get this character, or they noted that this character didn't even appear in the manga. They just decided that we want this whole separate subplot with this Afro guy running around being super cool. But like one of my favorite like little lines is, like, I can't remember the scene, but the pop-up video basically just said, at this point in the manga, the author went on a long anti-capitalistic diatribe that wouldn't be suitable for like any sort of television consumption. like what is this? I don't know. I've watched this anime. It might suit it perfectly because it's kind of out there. That's my own little diatribe of comparing my manga, anime, and then like subtitled pop-up video notes. But as promised, I'll get you off on that. At where can we find you online? Where can we support you? Support you, Pro Wrestling Grind, etc., etc., etc.
Yeah, so you can support Grind. That's at Grind Puro, P-U-R-O. And we are on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter, or X, however we're naming that one now. and then you can support me and follow my journey on Instagram and X, or Twitter, at DelmiXO.
Well, Delmi, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been great having you on and being able to have you kind of share your journey with us. I guess we'll kind of like end it off. Do you have any parting words party worms of wisdom for the masses?
Parting words for wisdom. Bet on yourself.
And there you have it. My interview with DelmiXO. It was really great to be able to speak with, well, let's face it, speak with an MLW superstar on an MLW-based podcast. The first wrestler to do this, not counting MSL, who's dead to me because of how he's treated Microman. But it's great to have Delmi on, and it was a really fun conversation to be had. I enjoyed talking to her. I hope you guys enjoyed listening through me stutter my way through conversation with her, and just wish her the best of luck going forward. The future's looking up for someone who's already now traveling the world, running their own promotion, and booking their own stars of the future. So thank you all for listening. Again, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Hope you did too. Check out the plugs, for all that good stuff. Hit up Delmi's socials, because obviously, we need to support her as well, because she's awesome. She's a double champ and also hopped on this podcast. So what more do you need? Check out Pro Wrestling Grind. And all that normal stuff you do, like subscribe, all that good stuff, listen to the perks at the end. In the meanwhile, I'll see you guys later this week. MLW Confusion is a weekly podcast that is written and performed by Rob Kammer and hosted by Spotify for Podcasters. MLW Confusion is part of the Urban Wrestling Network. You can check out the Underground Rundown on YouTube at Urban Wrestling NW. The background music for this section is Ruined My Day, performed by Alan Schroeder. If you enjoyed this podcast and like to support, please like, subscribe, and tell your friends, family, and enemies. Leaving a review is also helpful, because word-of-mouth advertisement is very important for small podcasts. My social media links can be found in the descriptor below, but the Twitter and Instagram are at The Nova of Cass. That's TheNovaOfCass. And MLW Confusion can be found on Facebook at MLW Confusion, all one word. If you'd like to support monetarily and help upgrade my equipment, please check out my virtual tip jar at ko-fi.com/Casanova. That's CassOnova. If you prefer more bang for your buck, go to patreon.com/Casanova. For as little as $1, Patreon backers get access to the podcast early and without those pesky ads, plus other exclusive content. So join the crew that is headed up by Keith Wynn and Alan Schroeder and check it out. You can also find t-shirts, coffee mugs, and other merchandise at the Confusion Podcast store on Teespring. You can find that link below as well. For all business inquiries such as ads, sponsorship, and other voiceover work, please email at rzkammer@comcast.net. Kammer is spelled K-A-M-E-R-E-R. Thank you all for listening.